From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor On Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And if you have a question, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. The sugar industry and the fat industry. So did the sugar industry actually shift blame to fats causing difficulties with your heart, arteriosclerosis, and so on? We'll talk about a JAMA article that may link that together. And then Pokemon Go. You've heard of it. Maybe you've played it. Distracted driving. What happens and how many injuries are caused by this Pokemon Go game, which you may be addicted to. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's really a public radio thing or not.
We'll find out in our recipe today, Zorba.
Tiffany's lentil bruschetta.
A listener recipe to look forward to. Okay, to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask Zorba about today?
Well, basically, I am a pretty active person. I enjoy bicycling and hiking, and I have a problem that occurs once in a while, and it's actually pretty debilitating. What happens is I will be walking or biking, and after my heart rate gets up for a little while, I will get uncontrollably itchy. I will get itchy on my legs. I will get itchy on my arms. And it's to the point where I have to stop the activity until it dissipates. And I really don't know when it's going to occur. And it just seems plain weird. Huh. So I was wondering if Zorba had anything to say about that.
We don't need Zorba. I've got the solution for you. You ready? I've got this one. Stop exercising. Oh, no, wait. No, wait. We like exercise, right, Zorba?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We do.
Maybe we'll let Zorba take a stab at this one after all.
We do like exercise. Is that when you start to sweat? Is that usually when this occurs?
Not typically. Even if it's like kind of just light exertion, walking my dog.
Walking your dog. So just
Nothing that's incredibly, crazy exertion-wise.
So how long into the exercise do you actually do this? When does this actually occur?
I would say about probably 20 minutes in.
Okay, so 20 minutes into the exercise, all of a sudden you have this itching. Do you take any medicines? Are you on any medications at all?
I am on Eliquis for blood thinning.
Okay.
That's about it.
Now, I have a question for you. Did this start when you started the Eliquis?
No, not really. It's kind of started occurring. I've been on Coumadin or Eliquis pretty much all of my adult life.
Okay.
I'm 37. But, it just kind of started in pretty much the past year.
Okay. And the Eliquis you've been on for how long? Eliquis is one of the blood thinners. How long have you been on Eliquis?
I would say about 2 years.
Okay. So the first thing I look at whenever there is something unusual that we can't figure out is whether or not it's something like a drug reaction. And I don't know. I don't have it obviously in front of me whether or not Eliquis is associated with itching or not. It's something that you want to call your local pharmacist, have it look it up. There's a book called Facts and Comparisons that pharmacists have. You can also look online and see whether or not itching is one of the side effects. By the way, when you're looking at side effects, if it's less than 1%, then you have to wonder whether or not it's really there. If it's around the 3-5% range, then it means it really may actually be a side effect from it. So number one, I would wonder if it's the Eliquis, even though you've been on it for a while, whether or not that's causing the itching and whether or not it's an unusual drug reaction, which would mean you may have to switch to a different blood thinner. I'm not recommending you stop the Eliquis, which you shouldn't stop by any means, but that may be one of the issues that's there. The second issue that I would have is what kind of soap are you using? What kind of soap do you use when you shower?
I use a Castile soap.
Okay. Castile soap is good, but I would go to probably a soap that is even more gentle, such as Dove soap, and I would go to showering. How often do you actually shower? How many times a week?
Probably about 4 times a week. Okay, I try not to overshower.
Right, because that's the other issue. The other issue is often itching can be associated with skin that is too dry. Americans have associated dry skin with a healthy skin, and the reality is healthy skin is one where we don't remove all the oils, and we've just gotten used to the fact that we go in the shower and we shower all the time, even though we're not engaged in manual activities that usually make us dirty. You know, we have to wash certain areas of our body, under our arms and our pelvic area, but the reality is dry skin can also be an issue there. But if you notice, as I'm pulling around from this, if it's not the drug and it's not the soap, then I don't know exactly what's going on. In other words, you may have actually stumped me. But but because we are a crowdsourcing phenomena, we at Public Radio are the initial crowdsourcing phenomena, I bet a number of people will write at ZorbaPastor.org, that's ZorbaPastor.org, or will post in Facebook about itching and exercise. And I promise you on a future show, we will do a whole segment on itching and exercise because there are other people who have the same problem. But that's what I would look for. I would initially look for a drug reaction in soap to see if that's what's causing this.
Good luck with the itching and keep up that exercise. That is fantastic.
Oh, I will.
That you're...
Yeah, and by the way, what kind of dog do you have?
Oh, yeah, an important question.
Oh, I have all of the... I've got a Chihuahua.
Uh-huh.
I have a Dachshund, and I have a Chihuahua.
Wait a second. You have
Hold
a
Chihuahua?
What is a Chihuahua?
Chihuahua and wiener dog?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So you have three dogs?
I'm trying to picture that.
I've got a question. When you walk the dogs, mm-hmm. is there a pecking order in the dogs on how you walk them?
Well, I have the Chihuahua is on her own because mm-hmm. she's so tiny, she basically has a kite string that
okay.
I walk her on. And the other two are on a pretty industrial get-up. So they don't get away.
So they do not get away. Well, good luck. Keep exercising. Unlike what Rob said, keep exercising, keep walking the dogs, and good luck. And as I say, check the medicine out. That would be the first thing I would check out.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you
for calling. I need to see a picture of a Chihuahua now. I have never knowingly seen
a Chihuahua wiener dog mix. Look up Chihuahua.
Let's see some pictures on Facebook. Well, do you have a question for Dr. Zorba? Call in now at 1-800-462-7413. That is 1-800-462-7413. Before Zorba, we go back to our callers. Our topic today, something on sugar, on fat, and influence on medical research.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting article in JAMA, part of which I agree with and part of which I think is too extreme. So this was an article, JAMA Internal Medicine. They looked at the Sugar Research Foundation. They went back into records into the 60s, and they found something that I think is very disturbing, and I think it was really real. So let's look back in the 60s. Back in the 60s, among other things, there was no informed consent. If a surgeon decided to do surgery on you, they said, I'll do whatever's necessary. And there was no document, no side effects put in front of them. And quite often, surgeons would do more than they expected. For instance, when a woman had a hysterectomy, surgeons would often say, well, I took out your appendix while it was there because I knew that maybe later on in life it would cause you trouble. And informed consent didn't come in until the 70s, even for research studies. In research studies, doctors would give you medications and say, let's try this. And there was no informed consent. So we've got to look back into that time. So during that time, the sugar industry appears to, and I'm sure they did this, support research that showed that fat was the culprit in heart disease and that sugar was a minor player. And then, these docs and researchers were paid about $50,000 in today's dollars. They were, quote, supported. But in those days, they would just hand out the money. By the way, in those days also, there were advertisements that said 9 out of 10 surgeons smoke Camels. Mm-hmm. So I want to put this into a perspective of what life was like back in the 50s and the 60s. So the article in JAMA Internal Medicine implied, I think correctly to some extent, that the sugar industry wanted to take away the idea that sugar was bad and make sure fat was really bad. And we would get rid of fat in our diet. And we wouldn't really pay attention to sugar. And so enter in the 70s and the 80s, Snackwells. Snackwells were an example of a cookie that was absolutely an abomination. There was no fat in the cookie, but there was lots of sugar. So you won't get fat, you'll get sugar.
But we looked at this and said, low fat.
Low fat, so therefore
healthy.
It must be good. Now, the implication of the article is that the reason that we haven't looked at sugar as a major cause of heart disease is because of stuff that was done back in the 60s, and we basically didn't realize that sugar was bad for us. You know what? I think we always knew sugar was bad for it. My mother didn't want me to drink Coke because it had sugar. We don't eat a lot of candy because we know sugar really isn't good for us. And I think anyone who read anything or listened to public radio realized that sugar was associated with obesity and that obesity is associated with diabetes. So the concept behind the JAMA article is that researchers back in the 60s stopped us thinking about sugar. I think he took it a little bit too far. I think for probably 10 years that was the case. But I think back in the 80s, we started the beginning of the diabetic epidemic, we really started to focus on sugar.
Right. But some people have said maybe we had too much of a blanket condemnation of fat. Yes, we've been
having
some fats
are
particularly
you
bad, but maybe we should have been eating some good fats.
Absolutely. Too much of a condemnation. That had to do with a guy called Ansel Keys and the 7-country studies where he looked at fat. We now realize there's good fat and bad fat. Mm-hmm. And the Heart Association went to too extreme by telling people to go on the cardboard diet versus the Mediterranean diet. And people still believe the cardboard diet is the way to live, and it's not.
The
cardboard diet. That's where food doesn't taste very good.
Right, okay.
There's no fat. It tastes like cardboard. We don't get pleasure from food. I think we should get pleasure from food. We should eat what we enjoy, but we shouldn't go back to that high-fat days of brats and, you know, meat
chicken fried
and
steak.
Chicken.
But veggies and olive oil, lovely.
But veggies
great
and olive
fat.
Oil are great. But just to nail something, the sugar industry was bad, and industry always has had a place in medical in research, frankly. And we've been trying to get research dollars basically into a more varied way so that industry doesn't just simply support it. And this was an example of bad research because the sugar company wanted to take away the guilt from them.
Back to our callers now at 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba in Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Rob. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. What can we do for you today?
Well, I recently had a serious health incident with something that I wasn't even aware existed. So I want to know what experience you have had with cat bites, because my experience was pretty traumatic. Several weeks ago, I lost my old 16-year-old cat.
Aww.
So later, I adopted a young adult cat from a really reputable rescue organization. And then a couple of weeks later, he was sitting on my lap while I was petting him and reading. So I probably missed his cues that he'd had enough petting, but I didn't notice in time because he turned around and bit me really hard. I had deep puncture wounds on the top of my forearm and then fairly shallow ones on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very painful thing and a scary thing. So I did everything I knew to clean the wound. But I'm not sure that I did everything I could have done at home in order to have possibly prevented an infection. What I did was I expressed a little blood from the bite marks.
Mm-hmm.
I washed with antiseptic soap.
Mm-hmm.
And I used peroxide and then an antibiotic cream.
Yeah, no, that's as good as you can do. As good as you can do. Locally.
Doing a lot of good stuff there, but I hear there's a butt coming. Something bad came out of this.
But about 2 hours later, I was having even more pain. But it was the weekend, so I went to the ER and was seen by a physician's assistant, and he gave me a prescription for oral antibiotics, and he gave me a tetanus shot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, before I left, I really don't feel I was adequately warned about possible complications. So by the next afternoon, I had much more pain, and also some swelling and redness was starting.
Mm-hmm.
So this time, I called a nurse on call, which, by the way, is a great service.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
But she didn't know much about the danger of mm-hmm. cat bites until mm-hmm. she read her computer information.
Right, right.
So she told me that the majority of cat bites can become infected, some seriously,
right.
and that I must go back to the mm-hmm. ER and have it checked again.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back, and after I was seen by a nurse practitioner, she brought a physician who checked my arm and said I had a cellulitis infection.
Right,
right. He insisted mm-hmm. that I be admitted to the hospital and
right.
have
mm-hmm.
IV antibiotics
right.
for a few days.
Right.
I was really shocked.
Yes, no, it is shocking. And cat bites can be that severe. Cat bites can be very, very serious.
Wow.
And usually the first step with cat bites are cleaning the wound like you do. If it's not better, giving oral antibiotics, that's usually the step, making a good clinical judgment of whether or not oral antibiotics are there. You can lose a finger from a cat bite. It can be very, very serious. So did you end up in the, did you go into the hospital?
Yes, I did.
How many days were you there for?
I was there 3 long days.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, and it's very painful.
The next morning, mm-hmm. I even had pus draining.
Yeah. No. It's cat bites can be very serious, and the issue is you have to make a determination of which ones need oral antibiotics and which ones need IV antibiotics. And sometimes you don't know. You have to look over the next 12 or 24 hours to see how it develops. But you can get a gangrenous finger from a cat bite. It can be very, very serious. What'd you do with the cat, by the way?
I asked the people from the adoption place to come and get him.
Right, right. And the reality is that, I mean, I'm an animal person. I love dogs. I love cats. I can't have cats in the house because I'm allergic to them, but I love them. But I think when it comes to an animal like that, that animal is best put to sleep, mm-hmm. you know, because if you were stroking the cat, you're petting the cat. It's a very good example where you're not doing anything to startle the cat. If the cat bites you, that cat can no longer be trusted.
And I want to ask, how are you now?
I'm doing very well.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I sure learned a lot about cat bites.
Yes, you did.
A lot
and
more
you,
than I even wanted to know.
And you have read now, I'm sure, on the net about on the cat bites. Cat bites can be very serious. It's interesting. They can be much more serious than dog bites. I mean, dog bites mm-hmm. can disrupt
sure.
the skin and everything, but cat bites can have very serious repercussions. Well, I think you received good care, and that doctor telling you you had to be in the hospital the next day with IV antibiotics did the right choice, because if you didn't have that, you would end up going in 24 hours later, mm-hmm. and you would have been much sicker and had much greater chance of having serious complications.
Well, I'm glad it all worked out. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you are. And thanks for giving us this information. This will help other cat owners look at the seriousness and not cat owners of a cat bite.
The moral of the story, take cat bites seriously.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite hair splitters and fault finders, the Grammar Police. And Zorba, this week's correction comes from one of the staunchest branches of the Grammar Police, the Pronunciation Police. The following email came from a listener named John from Montana. He writes as follows. Dr. Zorba, I was a cook in the military, and the word puree is not pronounced puree. The proper pronunciation is puree. I'm sorry, he writes, but hearing something said improperly can get to me. Yes, I know the ways to say tomato, tomato are different for Yanks versus Southerners. However, cooking terms are pronounced the same everywhere on our planet. Puree. Hooray,
hooray
for puree.
Hooray, hooray, I got it. Hooray for
puree. Do you say puree?
Well, I don't, you know, tomato,
in the heat
tomato,
of the moment,
who
you
knows?
Might say puree.
In the heat of the moment. Well, I will try to say it the right way. But, you know, I said it the way my mom told me to say it. I mean,
puree.
Sometimes it's just stuck in the center of my brain. So I'll try. I'll try to do a better job. I promise.
Well, all these cooking terms come from France. And I guess they can be very particular about you. English.
Not all the
We're
terms.
We're all loosey-goosey.
What about taco? Taco doesn't come
That's
from
French.
That's not French. Yeah, it's not
No.
French. It's not a
My kids
term.
Like to say taco just as a joke, but they know it's actually taco. Puree some stuff up, put it in your taco. Listeners, were you always the first one to raise your hand in school? Well, you can join the ever-growing Grammar Police Force. Send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Or don't forget, you can post it on Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up. It may involve a puree of some sort, along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss. Right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, that's pronounced Puri, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for the good doc, but before we get back to our callers, it is recipe time again, Zorba, and this week we're in for a treat. Today, Zorba, we have a special guest joining in on the fun. That's exciting.
It's very exciting. Whenever we have any guest recipe maker, cooker, chef, it's always exciting because I always like to hear about what other people are doing because I love cooking and I love eating.
Well, Tiffany Correo is a dairy farmer from Princeton, Idaho. She was nice enough to send us one of her favorite recipes that she makes on her farm, and she joins us to share her delicious homemade recipe for Tiffany's lentil bruschetta. Do I say that right?
I think so.
Or we'll hear about it if I don't. Tiffany, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for giving us this recipe and for sharing it with us. Before we get to the food, let's hear about the farm, the dairy farm.
Well, it's just a little tiny family farm. We own 15 acres here in north central Idaho, and I started making cheese a few years ago, and I guess the rest is history. We had so much cheese, I had to sell it with our community.
What kind of cheese do you make?
So we make varieties of unaged, unpasteurized, soft cheeses.
So not American cheese.
Not American.
Now, wait a second. Soft cheeses are American. When you say American cheese,
That wrapped.
You mean that the wrapped singles. Kraft single?
Yeah, so not that. No, not that. How many cows are we talking on this? You said a tiny farm.
We have one Jersey cow.
That I would call a tiny farm. You can't have a dairy farm with less than one cow.
You get that much cheese out of one cow?
Yes. It's amazing how much milk product comes from her, and we have so much that we just have to turn it into products to share with our community.
That's pretty amazing. How did you get into dairy farming and one cow? I mean, that's a pretty unusual, sort of pretty unusual thing.
and that it is, Zorba. well, I guess go back a few years, and I had our first son, and so I chose to stay home from work in the grind mm-hmm. of 9 to 5, mm-hmm. and I needed a little extra something to do instead of just an infant. So we did buy one cow, and we already had several chickens. So I guess the rest is history, and we now made it a business.
So you are into lentils. You became interested in lentils. You've eaten them quite a bit. How did you develop this?
Well, to be honest, I grew up not eating lentils.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
I moved to north central Idaho, mm-hmm. and we are in a lentil capital of the world, believe it or not.
No kidding.
Huh.
Lots of pulses are grown here, beans, chickpeas, garbanzos, and lentils. So lentils are a really easy item to cook with. Like with beans, you typically have to soak them or purchase them in a can. And lentils, you just cook quickly, and voila, the recipe is made.
Right, exactly. Well, I love this recipe. Let's start with it. So start with 1 cup of uncooked lentils.
1 cup uncooked lentils.
2 medium tomatoes diced.
I'm seeing six medium tomatoes.
I'm sorry, six
diced
medium
here.
Tomatoes.
Two,
diced.
Six, all the same. Six. We're going to go six.
Six medium tomatoes. Some fresh basil leaves. Eight fresh basil leaves. Do you have basil in the wintertime? Do you have it in your house in the window?
We do.
You do. 1.5 teaspoons of garlic minced.
1.5 little tea garlic minced. I might go with a little extra garlic.
Yeah,
myself.
Yeah, I do love garlic. 1.5 teaspoons of salt.
1.5 little tea salt.
Some pepper.
Yum.
A tablespoonful of balsamic vinegar.
That's a big tea of balsamic vinegar.
2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Teaspoon of lemon juice. Tell me about the lemon juice. You usually use fresh lemon?
If it's available, yes, but otherwise we just use the juice in the wintertime.
That's right, the juice. And I like the frozen lemon juice, the stuff it's made. I think it's made by Minute Maid, better than the brand name, which was Real Lemon. I just find the frozen stuff has a brighter taste. Never as good as fresh lemon when you have it, but in the wintertime it's hard to get sometimes.
A little tea of lemon juice, however you want to slice it.
A teaspoon of dried oregano and a teaspoon of dried basil.
Teaspoon each of dried oregano and dried basil.
And now, 6 ounces of farmhouse cheese or feta. Now, is that the name of your cheese?
Our cheese is just the feta.
By the way, why is feta different? I mean, it has a different flavor to me. Is it the way you make the cheese?
Correct. So typically a Greek feta, which is probably what you're used to consuming, is a brined cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. It's brined and salt. So it's a saltier cheese.
Okay, so it's a brine cheese. And then pitas, crackers, or veggies for serving. So let's make it. We rinse and drain the lentils in a colander because we've got to clean them up and make sure there are no rocks and little stones in there. Bring a pot of water to boil. Add the lentils. Boil uncovered until tender but not mushy, and that's around 20 to 30 minutes. Once you start cooking lentils, you'll get an idea. It's sort of just like pasta. You get an idea of how long it is to cook in that particular pot, that particular temperature, how fast the boil is, and so on. Drain and cool, then refrigerate until chilled, and that's why it's important to make sure, I assume, it doesn't get mushy. Then dice the tomatoes, add them to a large bowl, keeping as much of the juice as possible. Chop the basil leaves, mince the garlic, add it to the bowl, then add salt, pepper, balsamic vinegar, olive oil, oregano, and basil. Stir it with a spoon, add the cooled lentils and some farmhouse cheese. Stir it again, refrigerate about an hour to let them melt, and then serve it with crackers, pita, or veggies. I think this is great. How old is you? You said you have one child. You've got one child?
We have one and then one on the way.
And one on the way. How old is the one that's there?
3.5.
3.5. And he must like this.
He eats everything.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I have to tell you something. I've got a granddaughter, and she's 1 year and 3 months, and she's, of course, the most beautiful child ever born.
Obviously.
My daughter-in-law is Brazilian, and one of the first foods you feed your child in Brazil is avocado.
Mm.
And so she loves avocado. And what's really important with your child and with child raising is to give them different textures when they're younger so they don't all of a sudden limit themselves in what they eat. And feeding your child lentils when they're young is wonderful because he's going to associate lentils with mom and dad and food, and it's a much better chance he's going to eat well throughout his life. So
lentils, good and healthy. Zorba mentioned texture, Tiffany, and I'm trying to figure out what's the texture end up like when you put the lentils together with all the other stuff here.
Well, I think the base ingredient is the lentils, so you're going to be consuming the lentils. So like Zorba said earlier, it depends how you cook it, similar to noodles. So if you want like al dente lentils or mushier lentils, I think your main flavor texture will be the lentils. So however you cook the lentils, and then, you know, your other ingredients will add.
Yes, yeah.
Well, Tiffany, we're going to hit the road after the show, and we're hoping to enjoy some of these lentils when we show up there with you in Idaho.
We're on our way, Tiffany. We're on our way.
But I better ask before we go, what is the name of the cow?
Ellie
the cow. Because you don't want to meet the cow and not know its name. It's a big faux pas.
Hey, send us a photo of you and the cow if you don't
Definitely.
Mind, or the cow. We want to post it on our Facebook
page.
I am sure our listeners are going to want to see the cow that helped with this recipe.
Okay, will do.
Thank you so much, Tiffany.
Yeah, thank you so much
thank
for having
you.
Me on your show.
Thanks.
To get a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org, or you can find it through Facebook.
Back to the phones now at 800-462-7413. We welcome a caller from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello there.
How can we help you today?
Say, I'm a 50-year-old male, and in the evening particularly, the right side of my right leg or my thigh, it's numb. And it's strange, and it's what the funny, real strange thing about it is, my golden retriever seems to know when it goes numb, particularly in the evening. And so,
so what is it? Your golden, what does it do?
He comes up and smells me and licks my leg, and he's like, "Hey, I think something's going on here." And so. It's a little bit painful, it's a little bit annoying, and it seems to happen when I am sitting down for a long time, maybe driving in the car, but particularly in the evening when I'm just kind of laying on the couch and things.
Well, two questions before Zorba gets in here. How long, when did you first notice this, and more importantly, when did your golden retriever first notice this?
I'm going to say about 5 years ago. 5 years ago, it started getting more prevalent.
So wait a minute. So the numbness, first of all, by the way, golden retrievers, all dogs, have a sixth sense. You know, they kind of know when things are going on in our body. We must obviously give them, you know, if you're a dog person, we give them cues. And they, you know, we've co-evolved with dogs and, you know, they give us comfort when we have discomfort. I mean, my wife has back pain on and off. She's had some surgeries, and the dog always knows when she has a painful day. I mean, he knows that. You know, he doesn't care about me. On those days, he cares about her. But this has gone on for 5 years. Back trouble? You have back problems?
No, not really.
No back problems. And this only happens when you sit down?
It tends to happen. I go for a walk every evening. Mm-hmm. Take the dog for a walk, and you know, and then you're sitting on the couch, kind of decompressing for the night, and then all of a sudden, this numbness and tingling seems to flare up
on the side of your thigh, on the side of your right thigh. Okay, so when you go for your dog, is your dog on leash or off leash?
When I walk, he's on leash.
So he's on leash. He pulls a lot or doesn't pull a lot. What's the golden?
No, I've got some nice corrective collars that keep them right in line.
Them. That implies more than one dog.
I've got two of them.
Two dogs. Okay. Two goldens or one golden?
Yep.
There's only one golden. By the way, does only one golden come up to you? What does the other golden do? Or do they both?
Oh, no, doesn't care.
They both are very inquisitive as Dad, what's going on with your leg?
Yeah, Dad, what's going on? So it's going up for five. What have you done for it? What do you do when you get it?
Nothing. My wife is an online doctor, of course, right? And so she believes it's a neuropathy of some sort.
Excellent. Good work. Yeah. Medical school and all. A neuropathy, I think that sounds good. It sounds a little nerve-like to me. That's what I'm trying to get at. Uh-huh. A couple thoughts come to mind. So first of all, this may be related to how you're holding the dogs on the leash, and that's why I asked you, because you may be pulling more with your right side than your left side if you're holding it in the right arm. And if you notice it always after you walk versus when you sit down in the middle of the day, that may be a possibility. But it may be occurring that way because of the way you're twisting your body if the dogs are pulling on you or you're leading them. And basically, I think it's neuropathic. I think the pain is coming from somewhere, probably in the low back, but probably around T12 or L1, which is the beginning of the lumbar spine. That's often where you have trouble, L1 and L2, which are the two initial vertebrae in the low back. That can produce some numbness and tingling along the thigh. And that's sort of where you're describing it. And so it's a function of most likely either sitting, number one, pulling or twisting the way you twist your body, number two, and of course rest, as you've noticed. So one of the things you can do, and we'll post it online at zorbapastor.org, is you can do some back stretching exercises and see whether or not that actually opens up the vertebrae between T12 and L1 or L1 and L2. And we'll put a couple of exercises on there. What I would recommend that you experiment with is after you bring the dogs back, okay, you're done, you go, honey, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch the tube, relax for the evening. Before you do that, do these stretching exercises. Give yourself 3 to 5 minutes of doing it and see whether or not that gets rid of the numbness or decreases the numbness, because that helps also answer the question as to what this is. That's what I would recommend. Okay. I would recommend we treat it like that. Some people who really have lower lumbar spine trouble never have pain in their back, but they have pain in the intervertebral nerves that basically go in that lower lumbar spine, and that's where I think this is occurring.
Nice. Okay.
And check in, you know, after you've done this for a while, check in with your medical team, your online doctor wife, your golden retrievers. let them see what's going on with you.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck. I hope that helps. Thank you for that call, 800-462-7413. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take a dip into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This question comes to us from a listener named Jill, and Jill writes, "Hello, Zorba. I recently caught one of your programs on the radio, and you answered a question, or you answered a caller with a question about RLS, restless leg syndrome, and sleepless nights, which is my very problem. One of your answers was to have 4 ounces of warm milk before bed, along with some leg stretches. I tried this," Jill writes, "and have had the last 3 nights of sound sleep. Hooray." Okay, that's good news.
That's great.
Now, here we're getting to Jill's question now. Now, my question is about
No. We stop
with the success.
At the good news and success. But if you want to go on, please.
I think I'm going to go on. Because she kept writing. I'm going to keep reading. Now, my question is about my granddaughter. She has trouble getting to sleep as well, but she is unable to drink milk. Would she get the same results with almond milk? Or maybe you have another suggestion. So maybe lactose or something. She can't drink milk.
Well, I think almond milk is a great idea.
A pretend milk product?
Or soy milk. I think that's great. I think the idea is that there's a warm product that you're drinking. And milk is soothing for a variety of reasons. First of all, we associate it with mom. And mom always means good things. Should always mean good things to us. Warmth and family and hearth. So I think the milk is part of that issue in there. But I don't think it's specifically limited to lactose and lactose products. I think easily I would try almond milk or soy milk and see what that would do. That might just help because we know something warm before you go to sleep just slows us down.
Well, Jill, if you try that, give us an email. Let us know how that almond milk works. Not many people know this. Zorba is long-lost almond brother, by the way. It makes sense. He's quite the rambling man. Do you have a healthy living question? Do you have a healthy living question for the rambling man himself, Dr. Zorba Pastor? Post it to our Facebook page or send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or, of course, through Facebook.
More of your calls to come, as well as another interesting topic. And we're going to try something new, Zorba, Facebook feedback. That's all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we go back to our callers, a topic in the news this week.
Pokemon Go. So you know what Pokemon Go is, right?
Right, yeah. My kids play it. You got your phone. You're looking for these Pokemon creatures.
That's right. And you're trying to catch the Pokemon.
You catch them. Got to catch them all, as I understand
it. You can be distracted. We'll talk about distraction. It's a big issue. But this particular research, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, looked at tweets over a 10-day period. They looked at roughly 345,000 tweets that contained the words Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Then they looked in the tweets to see how many words had the word driving, drives a car. The idea is whether or not people were tweeting, "Hey, I found Pokemon while I was driving." Lo and behold, 18% of the tweets that were studied showed the person was playing Pokemon while driving their car. In other words, we're not just talking about walking, we're talking about driving.
So you'd think this would be a no-brainer. Don't try to catch these Pokemon while you're driving yet. We do a lot of crazy things.
It is a no-brainer, and your brains may get quashed. Now the game prohibits a player from collecting Pokemon when the speed of the phone goes above 10 miles per hour. So in other words, they're not driving and speeding down the roads, but at 10 miles per hour, you can get into lots of accidents. And that's a great big issue when we look at driving. If we look at distracted driving as a whole, if we look at young men and women between the ages of 16 and 24, 60% of of the crashes are estimated to occur where the distraction has occurred within 6 seconds of the actual accident. In other words, you're distracted to 3, 4, 5, 6, and bang, you get into something. And we know that Pokemon will easily distract you for more than 6 seconds. Mm-hmm. So we've got to step up and stop doing this.
Right. I think people think, whether it's Pokemon Go or putting on the makeup or dialing or sending a text or something,
texting.
Like that, people think, oh, it's just a few seconds, no big deal. The data doesn't agree.
Any highway in America, have somebody else drive the car, and look at the other people in the cars while you're going down there, and you'll see lots of people are looking at the phone while they're driving. And the reality is, the data shows that when you look at the phone, it's the same as having one or two drinks on board when you're driving. Now, many of us, most of us know we do not drink and drive, but there are many of us that text and drive and get distracted while we're driving, and Pokemon is just one more thing that we have to be careful of. But this distraction also affects children. I did an article years ago that showed that kids who have loud noise or loud music in their ears often don't pay attention to what's going on around them while they're going to school. And after that, a young child actually walked over a train track and died around the same week that I published the article. The time has come to look at Pokemon and put Pokemon in its place. Do not do it while driving. Bad Pokemon, bad, bad, bad.
Back to your calls now at 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for Dr. Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. We'll talk to a caller now, Zorba, in Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hi. I have been experiencing body aches for about the past 2 years, but they are not constant. They'll go for about 2 or 3 days. Like, it almost feels like I'm about to get a fever or sick with a virus, but I never actually get sick. I just have the body aches, and then they last for 2 to 3 days. Obviously, I can function while I have them. I just feel terrible.
Have you had any kind of a workup for these body aches, any blood tests or anything done?
I had just the basic blood work, like a liver panel, I think it was like a CBC, and then I also had my thyroid checked. And everything came back normal.
What time of the day does this tend to bother you?
It'll start towards the end of the day, and then it'll be constant. You know, I usually have a hard time sleeping while it happens.
What sort of work do you do?
I'm in grad school, so I'm a graduate assistant.
Okay.
I don't do strenuous work or anything like that.
But do you sit for long periods of time?
Yes and no. I mean, that's pretty much my job, but I make sure to get up and move a lot so that my lower back doesn't hurt, you know, and things like that.
So one of the things we always look at whenever people complain about a nonspecific symptom, which is what this is, you know, body aches are kind of nonspecific. They don't point us in any particular direction, is we look at diet, exercise, sleep. Those are the three things to look at. If we just look at all three things to hit, what I would do is, from a diet point of view, I would look at eating a more Mediterranean diet. And if you go to Mediterranean diet, you'll get any one of the excellent diet books that are out there that talk about a more Mediterranean diet. I would reduce the salt in your diet as much as possible to see if that's a possibility. And I would look at increasing the amount of good fat in your diet, such as eating salmon twice a week, sardines. Herring, believe it or not, is actually an excellent form of omega-3 fatty acids. From an exercise point of view, I would look at regular stretching exercises, either yoga. Yoga is excellent for anyone who has any body aches on a regular basis. Even doing yoga once a day or every other day can make a big difference in terms of, in terms of that. And then number three, I would consider just taking a multivitamin. There might be a deficiency there that you just don't see, just don't find.
Right.
I'm not a big person who's into multivitamins, but I think when we can't figure something out, sometimes a multivitamin along with a dietary change and an exercise change may just do it. And then the final thing is sleep. How much sleep are you getting a night?
Usually it's at least 8 hours. I did recently get a new mattress because someone had suggested maybe my mattress was, and it was really old. I don't even know how old the mattress was.
So you're a graduate student. Old mattresses come with graduate school.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what you get when you enter graduate school. They immediately give you an old mattress.
Right.
Old mattress.
Yeah, exactly. No, I did get a new mattress about a month ago, maybe a month and a half. So I did have a bout of the body aches, mm-hmm. you know, about 2 weeks after buying the new mattress. But
it takes a while
that.
To get used to it.
Yeah. It does, and I also, yeah. but I've noticed that I do feel more rested when I wake up. But so I think the mattress was part very, of.
What do you do just before yeah. you go to sleep?
Oh, I usually try to like finish up laundry or stuff around the house. Mm-hmm.
Do you read
the end
it? Do you,
of the day.
Do you read in bed before you go to sleep?
No.
Okay.
Cell phone?
Yeah, not usually. Okay. No, I might set my alarm, but I kind mm-hmm. of just put everything aside and just turn
good,
out the light.
Good, that's very important. So, well, good
right.
luck. I would do all
okay.
of those things and then get back to us. Clearly something is out of sync, and these things mm-hmm. can make a big difference.
Well, we've got a great unanswered question here. You're in grad school for what?
Actually, I'm getting my master's in public health.
Public health?
Oh, good
yeah.
work.
Well, we'll give you a yeah. couple years and then have you on as a guest.
Oh, that would be great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for
thank
your call.
You.
Good luck. I hope
thank
that plan
you.
Of attack helps.
Yep. Good
okay,
luck.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that call at 800-462-7413. An email question now, Zorba. This one from Jim in Jacksonville, Florida. Jim writes, "Dear doctor, recently I have noticed, thanks to my daughter, the hairdresser, a change in coloring in my hair. Attentive hairdresser daughter, good. I am 77 years old, and for the past couple of months, I've noticed a green tint to the hair on the right side of my gray hair just in front of the ear. Some months ago, I changed shampoo. Is it possible that the shampoo may have had an effect on the change? If so, what would cause the change in this particular area? And not the entire head. I've heard of people going gray, Zorba,
but not,
not
people
out
going
of the
green.
Punk, out of the outside of the punk rock scene. I have not heard of going
exactly.
green.
You know, and go green does not mean you want to go green with your hair. My mother's hair, by the way, was green for about a week because she would get her hair dyed, blonde mm-hmm. hair dyed, and the dye that they used was wrong, and so she had bright green hair. Picture this, 1966,
ahead of the time,
ahead of the curve. Time, but she did not. I think she was ahead of her time, and she refused to. I've got a memory. She refused to have anyone actually take a picture of her with her green. She had poofy hair.
She wore a babushka over that or something.
Of course. So you can eat a babushka or something plastic on top of her head. The answer is it might be due to the shampoo. Why? Well, it depends. Some shampoos actually can contain dyes that actually, I don't know if you're using a shampoo that's giving your hair some luster to it that could be causing it. Why would it occur over the years? I don't know, but we sweat more usually on that side of our head, around our ears. We tend to sweat more than that. But apart from that, I'm not exactly sure. And I think your hairdresser daughter is the one who could easily answer that question because she went to hairdressing school, cosmetology school. And what she should do if she doesn't know is ask her instructor.
Well, you know, I remember there was a shampoo. I think it was Head & Shoulders. On the commercials, they'd wash one side with their brand, mm-hmm. right, and the other side with uh-huh. the other brand.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You wash
That's
one side with this
do.
New
That's
shampoo.
Exactly.
The other side with the other shampoo.
I think
if one keeps going green,
Rob has come
boom.
Up with the scientific answer. The real question is
this.
What happens in the center of your head?
Right. That's the place to watch. Well, good luck. I hope we solve the mystery of the green hair. And I'd love to hear from anyone else who's had this same issue too. Gray hair going green.
That's right. You can always post that on Facebook.
And or send an email.
ZorbaPastor.org, and we will watch them, and some of the times we'll actually read them on the air.
We would love to read your email, Zorba@WPR.org. Before we head out, Zorba, let's get social and shine a light on our social media juggernaut, the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. This thing, it's sweeping the social media world.
Sweeping.
It's trending,
right.
I think.
Trending.
Or whatever it does on Facebook.
No, trending. Sweeping is an old word. Trending is a new word.
Dominant social media presence. We always appreciate our listeners posting their thoughts on our Facebook page. We want to acknowledge that participation, a new-ish segment. We're calling it Facebook Feedback.
I love it.
Good alliteration. Several weeks ago, Zorba, you posted a photo on that Facebook page of you wearing a blue T-shirt that said,
that's right,
you remember
that's
this
right.
T-shirt,
No Kale.
And it was
right.
the word kale with a big red slash through it. Go to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page if you want to take a look.
Like no smoking, it had no kale.
No kale. It was your 69th birthday. You wrote that you were pledging to go kale-free, and you went on to say, I hope others will join my crusade to rid ourselves of this cruel and unusual vegetable, down with kale, you wrote. I like kale. I'll defend kale on the field of honor if necessary. The response was huge and quite divided. You know, who knew kale was such a wedge issue? Here's a brief sampling of comments.
Especially
from our,
in the political times such as this.
Right. This is
who knew kale? I don't even know.
It's dividing the nation.
Pro-kale and who's against kale.
The nation.
Right.
So here's what our listeners on Facebook had to say. Here we go. Carla in Illinois says, delicious kale. I can enjoy it if it's steamed with a dash of cider vinegar. Maybe if I smother it with cheese sauce or top it with Cool Whip. So I think you're just disguising the kale at that point, Zorba.
Oh, it's not disguise. He's using kale as basically a skeleton for Cheese Whiz
okay.
and Cool Whip.
All right. Kale with Cheese Whiz. Pamela in Montana writes, never kale forever.
That's right. I love it.
Part of the pro-kale faction out there. Evelyn in Spokane, Washington writes, massaged kale salad or kale in a smoothie? Yum-o.
Kale
I mean, it's
in
expensive.
A smoothie?
Having to take the kale to a masseuse and get him to massage it.
Yeah, but
they put
it
in
it.
The
it's
olive
an organic,
oil.
It's an organic massage.
Oil.
It's an organic massage.
Works out the muscles, the toughness in the kale that you sometimes
yeah,
get.
Yeah.
Nolan in Hillsboro, New Mexico says, ha ha, I love, I didn't do that laugh very well, did I?
No, you did.
Ha ha.
You did it. You got it.
I love kale. Ha ha. Happy birthday, kale wimp. Nolan writes, you're a kale wimp now, Zorba? What do you think?
Said, I love it. You know, that's what it is. You know, kale today, kale tomorrow, kale forever. Depends on your view.
Well, you're twisting with the wind here, Zorba. On the other side of the kale divide, we have these Facebook comments. Tom in Chicago. Amen, Doc. Throw it to the rabbits.
I'm with you.
James in Washington State. He's not pulling any punches. Kale sucks. Horrible hipster trash food. A little harsh. Jerry at Eau Claire, Wisconsin says, maybe the next big thing will be steamed crabgrass.
You know what? There's a market for that.
If we can do steamed creeping Charlie, my lawn will be a moneymaker. A New York listener named Isa really drives her point home. I hate kale. I've always hated kale. For at least 65 years, I have hated kale. The idea of kale with Cool Whip makes me puke. Give us a break. Happy birthday. I want that one reenacted by maybe Christopher Walken or James Woods. I hate kale. I've always hated kale for at least 65 years. I can't do Christopher Walken. I can't do anybody. One last one here, Zorba. Terry from Arkansas brings it home with a surprising but somewhat off-track revelation. Zorba, oh, you share Bill Clinton's birthday. He's
I do.
70.
I do.
You knew
that. That's right. I do. I knew that.
Mm-hmm. Does he eat kale?
I knew that. Bill Clinton, hard to say.
Yeah.
Hard to say. He might say that he eats kale,
right.
But the real question is, does he really eat kale or has he really had kale?
Would you like to add your two cents to the show? Can I get a kale yeah or no? Just keep an eye on the Zorba Pastor On Your Health Facebook page and post away. Or you can always send your thoughts in old-fashioned email format to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
That's right, ZorbaPastor.org. You can see lots of photos, get lots of recipes, and get lots of advice.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1008Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.